Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, August 13, 2019. A South Sudanese lawmaker blames bad leadership for his country's economic crisis.
Incoherent public policy is a problem, and if you don't have those, all those things, what will happen? But they definitely behave as flowers. People behave like animals in the bushes of South Sudan.
And the UN is asking South Sudanese church leaders to promote family planning.
As the church leaders, we always disagree with conduct because it is not mentioned in the Bible. And we are there called to lead people on this earth. We are representing the place of God.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A senior South Sudanese economist and lawmaker says political recklessness and poor decisions made by the country's leaders have exposed the economy to severe stress. Lual Achuil Deng says, aside from the five-year conflict, bad economic decisions have led to devastating economy. He says, Parliament's lack of oversight has contributed to the crisis. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Speaking at a weekend economic event looking at how to narrow South Sudan's budget deficit, MP Lual Achuil Deng, who also heads the Juba-based Ebony Center for Strategic Studies, presented a paper highlighting the mistakes South Sudan's leaders have made since the country declared its independence in 2011 up until now.
Incoherent public policy is a problem, and if you don't have all those things, what will happen? But they definitely behave as flourish. People behave like animals in the bushes of South Sudan. So this is the context where you have to look at our budget.
Achuil is calling for establishing a transparency and accountability forum to ensure oversight over the budgetary process. He says Parliament still has an opportunity to make the necessary changes. He blames the country's monetary authorities for failing to provide professional leadership, including the central bank, which he says failed to realize that South Sudan's economy is highly dollarized. Achuil says government agencies and departments also failed to manage approved financial budgets that had little to no oversight from the legislature.
If you don't implement the budget based on what has been approved by Parliament, is a violation of law, because it's called Appropriation Act. When it is act, it's appropriate, it's a law. But have you seen anybody being taken to court or having violated the budget? So here is where we have problems.
Achuil says rather than determining realistic expenditures and revenues, South Sudan's finance ministry has become a cassia institution. He is calling on lawmakers and authorities to guard against the greed and selfishness on the one hand and ignorance on the other.
The rest of the system must work hard to ensure that is implemented. But if you have the institution to restrain greed and selfishness, ignorance and arrogance, then that decision may not be implemented in good faith and can cause more havoc than what it was intended for.
Achuil says the problem is quite pervasive in South Sudan combined with a sense of impunity across the board. According to the World Bank, the security sector in South Sudan takes 60% of the total annual expenditure of the government, which Achuil points out is not physically sustainable. Sebastian Ochan is chairman of the United Democratic Front, or UDF.
We as South Sudan are facing a lot of difficulties, of which when we don't pay attention, it will erupt. Our country will collapse. So the first thing for us to see now is peace, so that we lay all our efforts in rebuilding and reconstructing this country, especially on the field of education, agriculture, another means.
Agri-Tisa Sabuni, President Salva Kiir's economic advisor, agrees with that assessment.
Do budget for what, given all the challenges and the odds, can be done in the course of that financial year. Don't bite more than you can chew. The gap should not be there, because allowing a gap will create budget execution problems. especially if the capacity is not there. So as much as possible, the gap should not be there.
Parliament is expected to approve a 280 billion South Sudanese pound budget for the next fiscal year 2019-2020 with a resource gap of 77 billion South Sudanese pounds. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The government and SPLA-IO commanders in Kopera County of Yei River State have apologized to residents for human rights abuses committed by their forces during 3 years of fighting in the area. Residents in government and SPLA-IO controlled areas of the county say both sides must promote peace and reconciliation among communities. Daniel Friday Martin has more for VOA from Yei Town.
Residents in both government and SPLA-IO-controlled areas of Kopara County say the two sides must now work to promote peace and reconciliation among communities. The commanders were speaking at a weekend peace and reconciliation dialogue facilitated by Army Civil Affairs Division in Limuro Village of Kopara County and talked about how to jointly improve security and reconcile communities. Government and opposition forces fought in Kopara County within hours of the signing of the revitalized peace agreement in September 2018. Dozens of unarmed civilians were killed, thousands more were displaced, their property looted by both sides. SPLA-IO Field Commander Brigadier General Sami Logelong apologized to the civilians for crimes committed by his forces. Speaking in Arabic, Logelong says the time for fully implementing the peace deal is long overdue.
We have come here for reconciliation. If my soldiers have committed crimes against your will, I called for forgiveness on their behalf. You forgive them? Because we, the soldiers, both in the government and the SPLA-IO, have agreed to implement the peace deal because people are tired of war. We all need to contribute towards development, and the SPLA-IO stands for peace.
Logelong is calling on South Sudanese politicians and people outside the country to stop the negative propaganda campaign and work to restoring peace and stability across the country. Speaking in Arabic, Brigadier General Lazarus Angoni, the South Sudan People's Defense Force Field Commander in Kopara County, also apologized to the community on behalf of government forces.
For us soldiers, we don't have problems between the two sides. If you are a chief or an elder, tell your children in the bushes that the government and the SPLA-IO forces wants you to return home. And we don't want any war in Yei River State because the peace agreement has united us as one.
Lazarus and Sami both said their forces will allow free movement, respect civilian rights, and facilitate unhindered access for humanitarian organizations. Speaking in Arabic, which village resident Grace Panwell says both sides must work for peace to restore trust among the civil population.
We want our civilians suffering in Uganda to return home. We need our markets reopened and all the roads to be free. We don't want the soldiers to transfer their anger on the suffering civilians. For us, we have forgiven them.
59-year-old Limuro village resident Benjamin Danya says both sides committed crimes against humanity in the area. Speaking in his native Pojulu dialect, Danya says residents have forgiven the warring parties, but they want the forces from both sides to help rebuild their communities.
I have forgiven them because the SPLA-IO and the government forces, who are our own children, did a lot of bad things on us, and we know they cannot pay back our lost properties and lives lost during the war. We demand them to pay us back by opening schools, provide clean drinking water, food, and construct health facilities.
Kopara County Commissioner Emmanuel Kamis is calling on the government and the SPLA-IO to peacefully coexist.
Today, we are sitting here as brothers and sisters who were previously fighting each other. But today we are eating together, and that is because of the peace agreement. Let us forget what happened from yesterday backward. Let us embrace each other as brothers, as people of Yei River State, as people of South Sudan. Let us implement the agreement so that our people can rest.
Tamir says county authorities are committed to working with the SPLA-IO to reconcile communities and build peace at the local level to support implementation of the River Talas peace deal. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday-Martin in Yei.
The November deadline to form the revitalized transitional government of national unity is approaching, and one expert says it's unlikely that the deadline will be met. Some required tasks have been completed as per the deal. According to Brian Adeba, Deputy Director of Policy at the Washington-based Enough Project. But he says that does not include other contentious issues that are still unresolved.
Among those that are pending is the critical issue of troop cantonment and the unification of the forces. So that has not happened. And then, of course, there is the issue of the most contentious issues here, which is the Independent Boundaries Commission. So there is no conclusive recommendation on the number of states at this particular moment, which means there is a deadlock. And then there's the issue, of course, of demobilization and disarmament commission, the formation of that. So this is the DDR commission. This is related to, of course, cantonment of troops and the unified training of all the troops that are fighting, including the government troops and the SPLM-IO troops. So cantonment has not happened. And if cantonment does not happen, there is no peace deal, so to speak of. And it behooves of those who are in leadership right now to dedicate the resources that are required to ensure that cantonment, troop cantonment, happens. With regard to your question of whether the government of national unity will be formed on November 12th, I think that if we look at the expressions of the most senior people in government about the possibility of meeting this deadline, the news is not good. Salva Kiir himself, the President of the Republic of South Sudan, has said that he believes it will not happen and he believes more time is needed. So, like all the others, I believe that the November 12th deadline is not going to be met. The formation of that of the government of national unity will not be met.
Brian, what do you think is contributing to the lag of forming the unity government? You mentioned that there's 69 tasks, 27 have been completed. What is the issue? Was the timeline too ambitious? What's going on?
No, it's not that the timeline is ambitious. What we're seeing really is the lack of political will needed to ensure that troop cantonment and the training of unified forces takes place. This lack of political will is manifested in the foot dragging in ensuring that there are resources, money, for troop cantonment. We don't see that. The government is not forking out the money that is needed for troop cantonment. Now, the government will say that it doesn't have the resources right now.
Who is responsible for making sure that those resources are there? Is it the South Sudanese government? Is it Western partners? Who's responsible for that?
Western partners have long ago decided that they're not going to fund anything related to this peace agreement. So the responsibility primarily falls on the government of South Sudan. And the government of South Sudan is displaying a lukewarm response to ensuring that there are resources for troop cantonment. Now, the government will say, of course, that it doesn't have the money. Yet, we have seen in the media money that is earmarked for the peace process being diverted by senior government officials for other purposes, like purchasing houses and buying expensive luxury vehicles. So there is a problem right there. And so if this doesn't change, and it's unlikely to change, the formation of the government of national unity will not happen because there is no, you know, the security arrangements are not complete. And this agreement is underpinned by those, by these security arrangements. And if they're not there, therefore, it doesn't, the peace deal doesn't happen.
That was Brian Adeba, the Deputy Director of Policy at the Washington-based Enough Project. He was speaking to my colleague, Ayen Deng Bior. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, some South Sudanese religious leaders resist the pressure to promote birth control. That story is coming up right now.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you have any family or friends living overseas? And what do they tell you about where they live?
Okay, some say that they are working hard, especially those who go in Asia working hard like slaves, because they work from morning up to evening, and they are not paid on a timely basis as they are paid in Europe.
They would usually say things are difficult, not easy as we think it is.
I have one friend and I have one family member, and what they keep on telling me that things are not easy. But what I also don't understand, if things are not easy, then why are they not coming back home?
Yeah, I have my friend from works in Dubai. Also, he cries Dubai, they suffer a lot. If you were ladies, they can use you without giving any money. So I know that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus, and it's time for our Tuesday Health segment. Today, we are talking about birth control in South Sudan. The United Nations Population Fund is encouraging religious leaders and faith-based organizations to participate in promoting family planning to reduce maternal mortality rates in South Sudan. The head of the UNFPA in South Sudan says only 2% of women are using family planning. But religious leaders say the church only supports natural family planning. Winnie Chirino has details for VOA from Juba.
Mary Otieno, UNFPA's country representative for South Sudan, says maternal deaths remain high in South Sudan, with 789 women per 100,000 live births dying due to complications of childbirth. Otieno says a South Sudanese woman has on average 8 children, while women in the rest of the world have on average 3 to 4 children. She says the more children a mother bears, the more likely she is to have complications and possibly lose her life, as well as the babies during childbirth. Otieno says the number of South Sudanese using modern family planning methods is very small.
Only 1 in 50 women are using modern methods of family planning. That is 2%. In most of the world, even the lowest is like 30 or 20-something, but here it's 2%. So you can see the magnitude of need.
40% of South Sudanese girls are married below the age of 18, and many women still experience gender-based violence, according to Otieno. She says only 40% of health facilities in South Sudan are functioning, which means if a mother goes to the hospital, she is unlikely to find anyone to advise her on family planning.
Women, men, and as couples, do not have the right information. So that is why we are holding this meeting with the faith-based organization and faith-based religious leaders, traditional leaders, to go into their communities, to educate their communities about the benefits of spacing their births. We are not talking about limiting numbers. We are talking about spacing births so that the woman and the child, you know, have time before, you know, the other baby comes.
Otieno says girls' lack of access to education and cultural norms remain obstacles to advancing family planning activities in South Sudan. Reverend Peter Lewat Oduha from the Torit Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan says he does not believe in modern family planning methods, noting the Bible teaches people to, quote, go and fill the world.
As the church leaders, we always disagree with conduct, because it is not mentioned in the Bible. And we are there called to lead people on this earth. We are representing the place of God. The only thing that we encourage people is really to know the time of pregnancy. and the family as in the home, because the family plan was made by God.
Father John Ochaya, a Catholic priest from the Juba Diocese, says the Catholic Church disagrees with modern family planning and only permits natural family planning methods or the rhythm method. He claims using condoms encourages prostitution on the streets.
Whatever we do, we have to consult the Bible. So when we talk of the family planning, there are other things which is not natural to be imposed. And that one also the destruction of the life, by the way. It is the destruction of the human life. That is why we are very keen on that. We don't allow anything that cannot go with the law of the church.
Pastor Clement Joseph Arcangelo, president of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in South Sudan, says his religion teaches educate followers on several types of birth control and their side effects, but it encourages methods that promote integrity in the family.
We actually talk about family planning. Most probably our approaches are different from the ones that are given by the NGOs and other people. For example, when we talk about family planning, we talk about using also the natural methods that God has created there and using other safe methods, because not all methods of family planning are safe by themselves.
Otieno says UNFPA is training midwives on child delivery, family planning and counseling. UNFPA provides sex education to faith-based organizations and school children so that young South Sudanese understand reproductive health care. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Still on health matters, the World Health Organization calls the new treatment for Ebola a very positive factor in the fight against Ebola. But it says this alone won't stop the virus in its track. The WHO says the human factor is very important, and community engagement as well as surveillance, prevention and vaccinations are critical in bringing the epidemic to an end. For VOA News, Lisa Schrein reports from Geneva.
Rigorous clinical trials of four treatments for Ebola show that two of them vastly improve the chances of survival. The World Health Organization says the use of Regan EB3 and MAB114 provide an effective treatment for people infected with the deadly virus. WHO calls this positive news as it provides healthcare workers with a new tool in the fight against Ebola. But WHO spokesman Christian Lindmeier cautions these new remedies alone will not stop Ebola.
What will stop Ebola under the leadership of the government in the DRC is good surveillance, good infection prevention and control, good community engagement, and excellent vaccination. So, of course, the human factor is a very important factor here. And the use of these therapeutics and the vaccinations in the most effective way possible.
The latest figures reported by WHO put the number of Ebola cases at 2,831, including nearly 1,900 deaths. The WHO is hopeful the new treatments will greatly reduce the number of people currently dying from the virus. Lindmeier says people who seek treatment soon after they become sick have the greatest chance of survival. He says it is important to come in the first 3 days.
That is saving lives, and that's clearly proven to save lives. Therefore, all efforts go into making people aware to come as early as possible, because it literally shows you with mortality rates between 6 and 11% that there's 90% chance of survival, whereas if you come late or don't look for treatment at all, there's a 90% chance of death.
Ebola lives in the forest, so it is unlikely the disease can be eradicated. WHO, however, says the new tools make it more possible to keep the virus in check. WHO says everyone must be made aware of the risks so they know what to do to save their lives. It says the best possible results will be achieved if people at high risk of Ebola are vaccinated and those who are infected are treated at an early stage. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Cameroon has threatened all journalists who, it says, are refusing to be patriotic after TV reporter Samuel Wazizi was arrested for allegedly supporting separatist fighters in the restive English-speaking regions. Journalists say it's becoming impossible for them to work as they face pressure from separatist fighters and the government. Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaounde.
Paul Atanganje, Territorial Administration Minister, says Cameroon's journalists are becoming highly unpatriotic.
They have one main objective, just to sabotage government action, to promote secessionist tendencies. I urge them to be responsible. Those who don't want to respect the laws will be booked as being recalcitrant and will be treated as such.
Atanganje also says most journalists support the opposition and believe that President Paul Biya was not the true winner of the October 2018 presidential election. Macmillan Ambe, president of the Cameroon Association of English-Speaking Journalists, CAMASSEJ, says the threat from the government is one of many that journalists have faced since the separatist crisis began in 2016. He says journalists should be given the freedom they need to do their work.
When you get Minister of Territorial Administration giving lessons to journalists on how to report, it just adds to some of the difficulties we are already facing. We are subjected to torture, be it physical or psychological. We've also had cases of several journalists who are being called out for questioning. So it becomes very difficult for us to operate.
Ambe was abducted by separatist fighters in the city of Bamenda last February after he criticized their call for families not to send their children to school. More recent threats came after Samuel Wazizi, an announcer at Chilean Music Television who has hosted shows critical of the government, was arrested by the military. His lawyers said he was accused of hosting separatist fighters in his farm, an allegation he dismissed. Journalist Promise Akante of Royal FM, a radio station in Yaounde, who also hosts critical programs, says she has been threatened several times within the past 2 weeks.
I have had several phone calls threatening me. Do you know that your daughter still needs you? I said, yes, sir. So be careful with what you say on air. I don't know who was calling. The person threatened me and said, be careful with what you say on air. I'm telling you this, another person will not be this nice to you.
The separatists launched their fight in 2017 after English speakers protested political and economic discrimination in the majority French-speaking country. The government reacted with a crackdown in November 2017, and since then, 2,000 people have been killed, according to the United Nations. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaounde.
That story by Kinzika brings us to the end of our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Pili Pili by Willie Paul.
Nice now we live Pesa so kila kitu, alinifunza mama re, heshima ndo kila kitu, walisha sema wahenga re. Ukipata magari, utapotea baby we. Ukipata mapeni, utapotea mbona. Nikuita malaika, tabia zako, hazi ya batani, mbona. Nikuita mama yao, ya watoto wa.
We have been listening to Willie Paul with the song Pili Pili. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. We hope you can join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.